another injury has impacted the NBA playoffs. I'm Brian Gibberman here with Adi Joseph on the Podium Game Podcast. Adi, how you doing today?
I'm good, Brian. How are you?
I'm doing very well. So I guess we have to start this with John Wall, which is unfortunate. That series, as all of them are, tied at one. I went back and looked through on Basketball Reference. I'm pretty sure this is only the second time since 1979-80 that all four series are tied at one.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a crazy, kind of in a bad way, second round. It certainly hasn't been, you know, awesome or jaw-dropping or amazing. Really, so far in the playoffs, we've only had one great series, but at the same time, out of the 12 series we've had, you know, at least this round's close. It certainly looks interesting.
And it's nothing like starting a podcast and ending up all over the place. I forgot to mention, you are the NBA editor at Sporting News. How has the new gig treated you?
It's great. You know, I've been there for a month. This basically started my second month on the job. And we have a lot of really talented people working with us. Our main NBA columnist is Sean Devaney. And we've got Jimmy Spencer covering the Warriors' amazing run for us right now. And Danny LaRue just started as a salary cap expert. And Tim Fakeless does player development. It's been a really interesting and unique challenge for me, too, stepping into a more prominent role. And I've liked my first month a lot because, well, I took over at a good time. There's plenty to talk about in the NBA right now.
Anything specific we should go to the site to see right now?
Oh, definitely. Well, Jimmy's Warrior coverage has been great, and he's really humanized the Warriors. Sean is doing a fantastic off-season series about all the teams who are out of the playoffs. And, you know, just yesterday he reported a league executive telling him that Bucks small forward Chris Middleton is going to get a $15 million a year offer, which, you know, I knew it would be high, but $15 million is pretty big. So, you know, Chris, he's doing a really good job checking in with all those teams whose seasons are over. And, you know, I talked to Jamal Wilkes for 40 minutes, Lakers legend Jamal Wilkes, about all sorts of stuff and playing with Showtime Lakers. And so, yeah, I think we have a lot of good stuff, and I hope people go. Sportingnews.com/NBA if you're so inclined.
All right, so make sure to go check that out. Now we will circle back to John Wall, where I was planning on starting. We finally got there 3 minutes later. I don't think they have any chance without him. Do you any reason you would dispute that?
People are so inclined to just diss the Hawks and rip them apart. And the fact is, it's very rare that a number one seed is not discernibly better than a number five seed. And that is, I mean, the Hawks won 14 more games than the Wizards this season, and the Wizards had John Wall all year. Now, I have a really hard time imagining the Wizards clawing out more than one or two more wins. Three more wins just seems like a stretch, especially given that even though, yes, they can, in theory, only win their home games and end this series in six, it's such a huge adjustment for the Wizards to go to without John Wall.
The Wizards were that weird team where they basically brought on, I've talked about this before actually, and they brought on basically a whole new identity with the playoffs and how they've been running their rotation, where they're still playing their starting lineup, but then they're playing much better units as they filter through because Whitman's done a better job. That I don't necessarily think their win total in the regular season represents how good they actually were. I thought they had a chance to win this series if Wall was healthy, and I'm kind of disappointed that we're not going to get to see that now.
Oh, they definitely did have a chance, and you're right. And the small ball lineup, it's sort of counterintuitive that in the playoffs, Randy Whitman decided to open up the floor and run a small ball lineup. When you always hear about how important it is to go big in the playoffs and how physical the playoffs are, but he has Paul Pierce, who's basically like the toughest guy in the league, except he's traditionally a small forward. So when he slides Pierce over to power forward and uses Otto Porter. I've been pushing for that. I used to live in near DC and covered a lot of Wizards games, and I've been pushing for more Porter Pierce forward pairings all season. It's amazing that it took him this long to figure out that it works, and it's not as amazing to see that it actually does, because Pierce is a power forward at this stage in his career. He is not quick enough anymore to consistently both create his own shot as a small forward against other small forwards and to defend the best, most athletic players in the league right now. But they're definitely a better team right now, or they were until Wall went down. Unfortunately, Wall makes everything happen for them.
What I'm looking for now that, I mean, unfortunately, that this series is kind of, you're kind of moving past it. I thought this might have been the sneakiest fun series, but that's obviously not going to happen. Unless Wall magically decides he wants to play with it. I mean, he played really well after he got hurt in game one. Maybe he decides to tape it up and play. I mean, if he does, good for him, but I wouldn't put that on him. What happens with the Hawks if Damari Carroll's shooting regresses?
The Hawks are going to have a really hard time next round. That's obvious. I mean, they're either going to play this stacked but weird Bulls team that can't ever seem to get everything going at once, or LeBron. And LeBron just loves facing the Hawks. LeBron has loved facing the Hawks for seemingly his whole career. And it's hard for me to say that the Hawks are any better than, like, 35-40% chance to beat the Bulls or the Cavs. With that said, Carroll's actually been playing really well for a while now, and I don't necessarily think it, I mean, he's been amazing lately, but I don't necessarily think it's fake. I think what is kind of more arbitrary is Kyle Korver having a game like he did in game one when they lost. He's going to bounce back, I think. I mean, have you seen anything that makes you question sort of the validity of Carroll?
No, but I just think 56-50 is a little high.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
Like, that's, I mean,
you know what he's doing? Getting his money.
Yeah, like, I want, put it this way, I'm a Knicks fan. I would like the Knicks to look at Carroll this offseason. He's one of the wings I think they should consider and sign. I think Carroll's a very good player. I just think 56-50 is a little absurd.
But you know what, going back to, if Chris Middleton's getting $15 million and Carroll, who was a starter on a 60-win team and won player of the month, technically, and, you know, he's having this great postseason, Carroll might be getting himself close to a max deal.
I was kind of hoping he was going to be like an $8 to $10 million target. I don't think that's happening anymore. I'd say, yeah. I mean, I don't think he'll go max. I think probably between $12 and $15 million sounds reasonable at this point for Carroll, right?
Yeah, he definitely doesn't have the upside that Middleton has. Middleton's a lot younger, better ball handler, not a system player at all. So,
now you mentioned Cavs Bulls, so we could just go in that direction. I have a favor to ask of people. Every time Derrick Rose has a good game, do we have to do the Derrick Rose is back thing? I mean, at this point, it's pretty much there's going to be times like any other player who's gone through as much as he has, there's going to be times where he flashes and looks like his old self, and there's going to be times when he doesn't look as good because his body just can't do it anymore. He's an inconsistent player at this point. I think that's something we all just have to accept.
Derrick Rose is not. He hasn't reminded me of the old Derrick Rose really at all. When he just because he's having a good game, he doesn't. You're not seeing him, you know, throw down amazing two-legged dunks anymore. And he's smarter. He's a smarter player. I'm very much with you. Let's kill that narrative. Let's kill the whole Derrick Rose is back at every moment that we can say it. You know,
I don't know if I've ever talked about this on the podcast. I saw that dunk that he did on Goran Dragic's head in person, that was the only time I've made audible noises in a press box.
Yeah, I mean, he never used his athleticism the same way Russell Westbrook did. You know, Russ is—he's a little, even before the injuries to either of them, Westbrook was more agile and more, just sort of. Westbrook kind of combines John Wall's speed and Derrick Rose's explosiveness, which is what makes him so ridiculous. But Rose had that, you know, that tremendous, like, just finishing ability and that explosiveness, and now he doesn't quite have that anymore. But he's really a smarter player. You see it all the time. You see him making passes he would not have made when he was younger.
I don't know if this is going to make sense, but the difference between Russ and Rose, I feel like in addition to the fierceness, Russ also has a smoothness to him.
Yeah, that's what I meant by agility. Yeah.
Yeah, Rose was always a little herky jerky and awkward.
Yeah, and I also think, yeah, I mean, flat out end to end speed, Russ wins that.
Do you think Russ beats Wall too?
I'm not sure anyone beats Wall, but maybe I would love to see Schroeder, Wall, and Westbrook and Lawson just take a basketball, because I definitely want to see him dribble with a basketball and do a full court sprint dribbling.
All right, I'm going to bring this off the rails for a second. I've been thinking about this in my head, and I haven't thrown it off anyone. I'm not someone who doesn't think Westbrook and KD is a thing that can't work. I think they're perfectly fine together. But I would like the Thunder and Wizards to trade Wall and Westbrook, just one-on-one straight up.
You know what? I'm a person who says that KD and Russ are great together, but KD and Russ are so much greater when they're apart because they have to do everything, and that's more fun for me. Like, it may not be in their best interest in terms of winning, in terms of sustaining their bodies, but as a viewer, I want to see Russ and KD do what they do when the other guy's not there. I mean, how much fun was KD when last season when Westbrook wasn't in? He was just taking over every game. And then we saw, you know, triple-double Russ every night. I'm with you. I'd like to see them split up just for personal, selfish reasons, even though it might not be logical.
They were animals. And then I just imagine them just running like a spread pick-and-roll offense with Wall just slicing up the middle and just throwing the ball out to Durant as Durant averaged 23-point attempts a game.
Hey, you know, Wizards fans are imagining the same thing.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Good point. Not going to happen for your Wizards fans. I'm sorry. But, you know, I don't think I...
You know what? Though, Brian, 2 years ago at this time, you would have said the same thing. Not going to happen, Cavs fans. LeBron's not coming back, Cavs fans. So you never know.
I don't have positive thoughts about free agents going to teams. That's not how you operate when you see your team get shafted time after time. So that I don't know this positivity you're talking about.
That's life as a Knicks fan, right?
Yes. All right. So back to Cavs Bulls. More important matters. Tristan and Mozgov. You see how slow the Bulls big men are, as I think they have 15 offensive rebounds between the two of them in two games. Do you think there's any way the Bulls can clean that up?
Yeah, it's called Mirotic.
Yes, well, there's that part.
Get your best player on the court.
It's so weird. I don't have an explanation. There's nothing.
No, my friend Sean Hyken wrote a pretty good column, and he basically said the truth, that bottom line is Tom Thibodeau has his guys, he only trusts his guys, and it takes 3 years for a guy to become one of his guys. And that's really frustrating. And I think that's part of what's leading to this whole fracture between the Bulls front office, who say, you know, we drafted Doug McDermott because he's ready to play, and you refuse to give him any shot. We drafted Tony Snell, and we thought he was a real good steal, and you refused to give him any shot. You made us wait three years to use Jimmy Butler. You know, Tibbs has a very specific style of basketball, and he's very grounded to it, and it works, it wins, but you know, he needs to take a look around right now before this series gets out of hand.
And it's pretty obvious that Mirotić and Snell should be in the rotation right now. Obviously, McDermott, that was more of a regular season thing, but
yeah.
Snell has the size, athleticism, and shooting on the wing that they could really use. And Mirotić is their best big man because Noah's horrible, Gibson's not himself, and Pau's really flawed on the defensive end because he just doesn't have the foot speed he used to have.
Yeah. Pau's also, he needs to go somewhere where he can, I'm going to throw something crazy out here. All right. Who loses if the Bulls trade Pau to the Thunder for Mitch McGarry, maybe Andre Roberson in a second round pick? Or maybe even a first-round pick. It opens up time for Mirotić. It gives Pau a system where he can play next to Ibaka, who will definitely cover up a lot of his defensive deficiencies. And it means that the Thunder don't have to overpay an Escanter.
Do the Bulls keep Butler if they do that?
Yeah, I think they do. I mean, Mitch McGarry, though, I think he's a better fit for backup big man for them, like the fourth big man in the rotation. They obviously need to cut Joakim's minutes a lot to keep him fresh. He has not looked fresh, but you can't give up on Noah yet. He's way too young.
I gave up on Noah like 2 years ago.
2 years ago? He was so good last year.
But then he got eaten alive by the Wizards. I just don't think he can. He needs to play like 20 to 25 minutes a game during the regular season because he hasn't been healthy in the playoffs for like three years now.
That's the problem. It's been since that, you know, everyone talks about Rose in that Sixers series, but Noah got hurt in that Sixers series too, and he has not ever been. His foot is just I don't even want to imagine how much. Like, how consistent that pain is to just constantly be playing so many minutes, playing so intensely, and have pretty much constant Achilles pain. He must, can't underrate that. And he's on a decent contract. He's a beloved player. He's your, you know, emotional leader. He's a very good player when he feels good. You don't give up on him. You just pull back his minutes a little bit and give him a break.
but he's going to be an interesting contract. You say he's good, but he can only play a limited number of minutes. I think it's up after next year. That'll be something to watch with the Bulls who knows where that goes. JR's back. That's going to be good. So now the Cavs will have six NBA players on their roster for the rest of the
season. Although Shumpert might not play. I don't know if you saw that.
So why did he come back in the game?
I don't know. It's tough to say with injuries. You know, guys lie about their injuries a lot during games, and then afterward are like, I should probably go to the trainer now. You know, it's a macho world. Sports are all very macho.
I am not macho. Definitely not. But so yeah, Shrump, that'd be a tough break for them because what you need is you need the flexibility to go with the two bigs when they need to, and then you need Kyrie, if they want to go small, you need Kyrie, JR, Shrump, and LeBron with one of the bigs, and that's pretty much the six guys with the little Dellavedova. If James Jones keeps making 80% of his threes, you mix those two in a little bit, but they're going as far as those top six take them from this point forward.
Yeah. It's a tough position to have have so little depth and to have potentially the two best players, you know, the best 1-2 punch in the playoffs other than maybe the Clippers, but LeBron can do things. I don't bet against LeBron. I don't bet against LeBron.
No, especially in this Eastern Conference now with how it's looking. All right, that's enough about the JV division. We'll head over to Varsity. The biggest surprise of the playoffs to me, or not of the playoffs, of this round was the Grizzlies winning that second game. Agree or disagree?
I think the Warriors kind of needed that sort of hit. I think the Warriors will bounce back from that hit, and they will probably win this series in five games. But I think it was an important thing to get out of the way against a team like the Grizzlies, who they match up so well against, that in the long run they're not going to be... I hate to dismiss, and I could look like a complete idiot in a week and a half from now when the Warriors and Grizzlies are playing Game 7, but I just think the Grizzlies are a very good team that could have easily made the Western Conference Finals if they were on the other side, but they don't match up well against the Warriors, so it was kind of good that the Warriors got a loss out of the way, and a home loss at that, and they're going to... It's only going to motivate them. The errors of last game, and yes, I mean, Clay was certainly locked down, but I think they're fixable. I think they're maybe not even fixable, but like a sort of a flukish. And I fully expect them to bounce back from that. But at the same time, the Grizzlies are a lot more playoff tested than the Warriors, and I'm not surprised they got a game. A game in Oakland, maybe, but... Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, because I'm with you. I think, much like with Bulls-Cavs, I kind of just thought that was the Bulls getting a game and then the Cavs were going to go do their thing. I'm kind of in the same boat with the Grizzlies-Warriors, that the Grizzlies won one. It was a nice story. But Klay Thompson and Steph Curry shot 3-for-17 from three.
Right.
And the Grizzlies basically have to win these games getting outshot from three by a massive amount, and keeping the makes at a similar level, because they don't make up anything on the boards. And
on the line. It's not like they're getting to the line that much more or
yeah,
anything.
And they don't. And they got a couple extra possessions out of turnovers last game, but that's not necessarily going to happen every game. So when you just look at it, there's... How do the Grizzlies make this up? They have to shoot an absurd rate on their twos, or the Warriors have to shoot like 20% from three. And I just don't see how Memphis can make this a long series unless Allen and Conley are just literally that absurd defending Steph and Clay.
Yeah, it's an issue. There's a lot of issues for the Grizzlies. Let me put it this way. I fully think that the Grizzlies have like a 70-80% chance of bringing back Marcus Gasol, but I'm not sure I would go back if my goal was to win a title. They have a very good team, but they have some systemic issues with this lack of three-point shooting and the importance of three players who don't shoot threes that well. And I mean, Conley can shoot, but he's not a knockdown Steph Curry level shooter. So that means that the shooting guard position and when Tony Allen's on the court, it's whoever the other wing player is who has to do all the shooting. Well, that's tough when you're facing the Warriors, and they have four guys who can shoot a three. Sometimes they even play, when they play really small and run green at the center, they got five guys who can shoot a three. And yeah, like you said, tough to make up those points because three-pointers count for more than twos.
And on your Gasol point, I wouldn't be worried at all about giving him a 3-year max deal, but from the team perspective, once you're getting to that 5-year max deal with him, I think I'd be a little worried about it.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, he'll slow down, but he's never really relied on quickness or athleticism of any sort.
True. Right?
So he's got maybe a body that could age pretty well, I think.
That's
just on the skill to set that he uses.
That's logical. I also can't dispute that at all. The final series we have here is Clippers Rockets. Are you finding this enjoyable to watch, or do the free throws kill it for you?
I didn't find last night enjoyable to watch because they weren't hitting their shots either. You know, I don't mind the free throws, but geez, they need to shoot better from three. Both of those teams. I did find game one very enjoyable to watch. You know, I love watching when a guy like Matt Barnes is, I think he's a joy to watch. when he's playing like that, when he's shooting, what did he do? Like 7 of 10 or something like that? I can't remember. He's just so energetic and just hitting his threes and seeming like half surprised every time. That's the kind of player I like, but the problem isn't so much the free throws and what they do to the time of the game. It's why the free throws are being shot. And, you know, I thought Tom Ziller had a really good column today about over at SB Nation about just let's prevent intentional fouling, or we're going to eat alive the NBA and we're going to make all the games look like game two of Clippers v. Rockets, and it's just, it's not a good look. You can say all you want, these guys should shoot free throws better, but they're trying. Most of these guys are really trying. You know, Shaq tried, and Shaq didn't practice hard on anything.
No, and if you go to an NBA practice and you watch guys shoot free throws, they all make them. Even the guys that shoot a bad percentage in games, they make free throws in practice. I originally fell on the side that I hated the idea of rewarding a team for a player's flaws and not letting the opponent take advantage of that. But I have since changed my mind. I don't know exactly what the solution is, but the NBA's goal isn't to keep the people like you and I. They have to keep the casual fans, and I think this really hurts with the casual fans, so I don't mind if they find a way to eliminate or limit the off-ball fouling and having guys shoot 30 free throws a game because they can't make any of them.
You know what's an interesting thing, too, is the ramifications of this. I mean, right now, look, DeAndre Jordan's going to get himself a max deal either way, but that max deal, if he's playing 25 minutes in playoff games like he did last night because he can't shoot free throws, the max deal doesn't look very good. But if they cut intentional fouling and the hack-a-shack treatment out of the game, DeAndre Jordan becomes a very, very valuable player, even if he is overrated defensively, which he is. But, you know, he suddenly becomes a truly, he's a very, very, very good offensive center already. And if you take the free throw shooting out of the perspective where you can't intentionally foul him, you know, it could change the way we look at certain players who can't shoot free throws. You know, I'm trying to think of some free agents right now who, but you know, there's a lot of big men in the NBA who can't shoot free throws, and their value is a little hampered by that. And if you take out the ability to send them to the line every single game, then, you know, Tyson Chandler being a good example, he's a free agent this year. Tyson Chandler's value increases a little bit if you tell people that you can't intentionally foul him at the end of games and you can keep him in.
Tyson's not as bad. He's like usually high 60s, low 70s. He's a little bit, he's much better than DeAndre, so it doesn't hurt, but the point with DeAndre, especially those guys who don't touch the ball, that he's basically the only time he has the ball is really when he's going to dunk it, so there's no opportunity to foul him. Like with Shaq, you're always going to have the chance to foul him because they're going to eventually give him the ball in their set and he was going to try and back someone down, so if you wanted to just bear hug him and foul him, you could. With a player like DeAndre, it changes the entire dynamic because he never has the ball in his hands except as he's catching an alley-oop and finishing.
So suddenly he becomes an amazing offensive weapon.
Yeah.
Because he's a guy who does nothing but every time he touches the ball, scores. And you can't foul him, you can't not keep him off the court, you know. I mean, his rebounding is so important to what they do, you know.
Imagine what
it's
his...
It's interesting how the dynamic could change, and there may not be a perfect, like a player who wasn't going to get the max, like DeAndre, would be more interesting to talk about in this way, but, you know, there's, even for him, certainly a max contract for DeAndre Jordan, if he's only able to play 25 minutes in playoff games, because a fouling doesn't look as good as if they can't intentionally foul him, and you're getting him for that high value, but you're able to keep him out there for 35 minutes a game.
So Houston in that second half of game two kind of got, they went really small. You think that's something they can pull off the rest of the series, or once the Clippers see it, make their adjustments, that they'll be able to take advantage of it pretty easily?
I think as long as they have Dwight on the court, Dwight likes playing with smaller lineups, and even when they don't have Dwight on the court, the Clippers, because Jordan, like we said, Jordan, he's going to get a ton of rebounds no matter who you have on him, but he doesn't have any post moves at all. He doesn't have the ability to take over a game because he can't create his own shot to even the slightest degree, even as much as Dwight can. So I think you can run small against them and spread them out and force Blake to play a little more aggressive perimeter defense than he wants to. And tire him out. He was tired last night. He was almost as tired as I was.
You get pretty tired watching the games?
Well, you know, I'm up at 8 a.m. Eastern. So, Eastern time zone, NBA playoffs are not a friendly time.
That's my favorite thing about since I've moved to the West Coast. I've gotten really used to, especially now that on weekends I don't go out and drink as much anymore, and waking up at 10 o'clock to watch football isn't as big of a deal, that the watching sports is fantastic with the West Coast time now.
Yeah.
I'm worried about Blake also. I mean, even if they get through this series, I just don't see how that team has enough left in the tank to beat the Warriors. When, if they had an actual bench, I think they probably would have been the best, and they might still even be the best shot at it, but I just don't see a realistic way that's, like, they would need to play Paul, Griffin, and Jordan, like, 46 minutes a night to beat Golden State,
yeah.
It seems like.
And, you know, you kind of wish, it's one of those things where if they played each other in round one, the Clippers would seem to have a much better shot.
Yes.
But,
yeah, 100% agree. That,
and don't even leave out J.J. Redick, who's been playing 40 minutes a game in the playoffs.
But you know what it is with Redick? I mean, he is guarding Harden, but I feel like he doesn't have to exert as much energy as guys like Paul and Blake do. But maybe that's even unfair with the way he runs around screens. That I'm being a little bit unfair in that.
It's tough to really say that anyone's playing an NBA game isn't exerting energy, and you know, 40 minutes a game is a lot. It's a taxing thing to not have a bench, and I think it showed itself last night. And you know, I still ultimately, they're going back to LA. Paul will almost certainly play. It seems like in my estimation, as a non-medical expert, that the Clippers are still in good position to win this series, but they could get run off the court by the Warriors.
I'm with you. I picked the Rockets in seven beforehand, but everything I've seen from the first two games makes me regret that pick, and I think the Clippers come away with it. So we'll finish off with this. You want to see Clippers, Warriors, and Hawks, Cavs? Is that what you would like to see in the next round?
What I'd like to see?
Yeah, just as a fan of basketball, what would you want the Western Conference final and Eastern Conference finals to be?
Oh, let's get a Knicks Lakers finals.
Well, wait, now? Okay, I'm fine. I mean, I don't know if anyone else wants to watch Langston Galloway, but I'm game.
As a fan of basketball, I guess I want to see. I don't care who makes the who plays the Warriors in the West Finals. I don't think that either of those teams is ideally equipped to make a strong run against them. But I think there's a lot of really interesting. I think it would be an interesting series either way. In the East, yeah, I would have liked to seen the Wizards make the conference finals, but now without Wall, I can't see it happening. I kind of don't want to see LeBron get another shot at the Wizards in the playoffs, and they don't even have LeBron, and they don't even have Walt. So I'd like to see a Warriors-Cavs finals. I think that would be really good basketball. I wouldn't mind the Bulls being there. I wouldn't mind the Hawks being there. I just think the Warriors have done so many great things this season. They've definitely been the dominant team, and I don't want to say they deserve to make it, but I think they will because they are the best team in the league right now, and they're the healthiest, which seems crazy to think about.
Wizards and Cavs would have been so much fun if Wall was healthy.
Yeah.
That's,
yeah, I agree.
I'm upset by that.
It's a bizarre little rivalry that Wizards fans actually do care a lot about.
I used to remember waking up. Those were my... I loved those series so much. I mean, they were always like the early weekend game on ESPN that got everything started. I remember used to waking up and watching those games. They were fun.
Yep, yep. I was in college for one of those. Might have even been the first NBA playoff game that I attended. Because I had not... never had season tickets or anything as a kid, but... I went to a Wizards-Cavs game, and LeBron had a triple-double with the Wizards won. Caron Butler and Anton Jameson had huge games, and it was a really fun experience, and the Wizards fans were definitely very behind that rivalry and do not like the Cavs or LeBron. And you know, even trading Waiters was like became public enemy number one in D.C. for a little while, but even without him, I think that rivalry is still there, so...
Yep, that it's too bad. All right, so why don't you plug what you got going on over at Sporting News one more time before you head out?
We've got a lot of, like I said, you know, we'll be there for the Warriors coverage with Jimmy Spencer. We've got Sean Devney is doing some great stuff on the draft and the off season and free agency and smart salary cap and analysis from Danny LaRue and. Good columns and analysis from Tim Fakeless, and I sometimes write things that you probably don't read.
I read your interview with the Rockets guy.
Yeah, that was good. He was really great. Unfortunate situation for him, but yeah, I mean, so hopefully you'll check us out. SportingNews.com/NBA.
Adi Joseph, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, that wraps up another edition of the Podium Game Podcast.